T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
The Diocese of Buffalo officially announcing they have filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy reorganization. Joining us now to speak about it and what it means for victims of sexual abuse who have filed under the Child Victims Act is attorney Steve Boyd. Steve, thanks for joining us this morning. We've been hearing this was imminent for some time. Why today, do you think? Why the timing of right now?
I think there are a number of factors that go into the timing of a bankruptcy decision. If it were a question of news cycle, it's the end of a news cycle of the week. Friday, viewership is lower. There is still a blizzard warning going on. So from a media perspective, it's a perfect time to do something that you'd want a little less under the radar, although this will not in any way fall under the radar. Yesterday, as I understand it, was payday for the Diocese of Buffalo. So it allows folks to get their pay without being impeded in any way on Thursday, and then you file on Friday. And frankly, this has been coming a long time. They released information sometime last year that they had $29 million in liquid assets. And clearly, with over 200 cases that are being filed against them in Supreme Court, they made a decision that they needed to move things over to bankruptcy court.
Steve, what happens to those over 200 cases that are currently in court?
They move. They are stayed, which means they are stopped in Supreme Court. And that's a temporary stay, and they move over to the bankruptcy court. And in Supreme Court, they are plaintiffs. In the bankruptcy court, they are creditors. So there will still be cases. There still will be financial settlements for people, but the diocese has now turned this into a financial transaction. And for many of the survivors who we represent, and many others, and some who don't even have lawyers, a lot of this has been about getting to the bottom of what happened, getting to the bottom of who knew what and when. The abuse itself is a betrayal. The handling of the abuse is a second betrayal. And what I fear for our clients is we'll never get to the true bottom of that second betrayal, when they just shuffled the chairs in the deck of the Titanic and moved these priests around.
Is this a scenario where there is going to be a certain amount of money allocated for all the victims to share, and then there is a cap that can be hit, so to speak?
In a normal bankruptcy, that's how it would work. This one is a little more fluid than that, because there is insurance coverage for the negligent retention and supervision of these diocesan employees, these priests, and in some cases, teachers. So there will be a substantial amount of money from the diocese, and even more substantial amount from the insurance companies. But ultimately, I think, yes, it will be a finite amount. But it was always a finite amount, even if the diocese had not been hiding assets all these years, and even if they hadn't filed for bankruptcy, there is only so much there. But for example, in the Diocese of Duluth, which is one of the most recent to settle, 125 cases settled for, I think, $40 million. The diocese paid 10 of that. The insurance companies paid 30.
We're talking live with Steve Boyd. The Diocese of Buffalo has filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy this morning. Steve, what happens to physical properties under Chapter 11 with the diocese?
There's a lot of issues with the church, because they have First Amendment protection with the physical property. So the churches themselves will not go away. There are certain categories of assets that will fall into the bankruptcy, but this is obviously not a liquidation. This is a reorganization for the diocese. So this isn't like, you know, some carpet store that you're never going to see again because they went bankrupt. This is a reorganization of an organization that will be here for decades to come.
Okay. Looking at what this means for victims, you had mentioned before with us in the past and just a brief moment ago about the discovery process, about how much information may now be shared or not shared because of the bankruptcy file. Is there any precedent for what dioceses have done in the past when it comes to a bankruptcy court of shielding or protecting somebody like a bishop or close to a bishop from testifying in court? Or is there scenarios where even though there's been a bankruptcy filing, that's been allowed to happen in some cases?
Yes, the latter. For example, Rochester Diocese filed, I think, in September. And so Bishop Metano testified before the bankruptcy court at the very beginning. And Bishop Clark, who was the bishop for decades through most of what the survivors there went through, will be deposed next week. However, there are severe limitations. So, for example, had there not been a bankruptcy, we would expect a bishop to be deposed for several days by all of the lawyers for claimants in the Supreme Court case. Bishop Clark's deposition next week is going to be limited to 3 hours. So if you think about Rochester has about half the cases of Buffalo, we have about 100 clients there. To depose someone about 100 cases in 3 hours is impossible. So the excavation of information and the discovery of what truly happened to these survivors has just been stopped by the filing of a bankruptcy, and that's the financial strategy that they've made.
Could Bishop Malone be called in on this? I mean, he was the shepherd here during a lot of this, right?
He could be, yes. And as he said many times, the abuse for most of these claimants, all of these claimants, I think, did not occur while Bishop Malone was bishop. But he was bishop for a long time. He was involved in some of that hiding process when they released 40-some names, but now we know there are over 100 names that should have been released. So the actions of the diocese in that respect are, I think, fair game for a deposition. But you don't just get a deposition like you do in Supreme Court. In Supreme Court, you say who you want to depose. In bankruptcy court, you ask the bankruptcy court, and you got to show them a reason why you should get a deposition. So all of that discovery is completely limited by the bankruptcy judge.
Are victims who have filed a claim under the Child Victims Act prior to this announcement in any better shape, you know, so to speak, with their case than people who may file from here on out?
No. What's going to happen in the bankruptcy court is, and the purpose of the bankruptcy court in itself, is to make sure that if everyone isn't made whole during a bankruptcy, if all of the creditors cannot be made whole, that they will receive something on sort of a pro rata basis, not say $100 million divided by 200 people, but a certain amount, because some abuses were worse than others. So I forgot your question, Brian. I'm sorry.
If somebody would be in better shape with their case moving forward if they filed, you know, sooner rather than later, now following this bankruptcy announcement.
So, no, what will happen and what just happened in the Rochester bankruptcy is a good example. The court in Rochester has set a bar date. And now every case, whether it was in Supreme Court or it hasn't been filed yet, every case will have to submit to that court. And once they do that submission, and it's an extensive submission that we'll be submitting for our clients, they'll have up until a certain date. So in Rochester, the date is August 13th. We call that the bar date. So all of the claims for the creditors have to be brought to the bankruptcy court by the bar date. So in Buffalo, the bar date will be significantly later than August 13th because they've just filed. But there will be this time period. And in that respect, in terms of, you know, the race to the courthouse, there is no race to the courthouse. Everyone will be treated fairly with respect to their claim, and the timing of when they filed will not matter at all.
Okay. Does the process slow down, though, because of bankruptcy court?
Well, it can. The Duluth bankruptcy, I think, took 3.5 years. It all ends on one day when it is all approved. So it can slow down. However, it's my understanding that the same attorneys in Rochester are working with the Diocese of Buffalo. And so it's just a question of how smoothly things go along. It'll be a question of how the judge handles things. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a long delay, but it's not going to be a short process by any means.
Okay. Looking at the people who have filed claims under the Child Victims Act, this announcement made today, you had to have been advising them that this would happen. So I'm guessing it's not a surprise to those people.
Yeah, we've been telling them all along that the diocese is planning to file bankruptcy. And I should mention that it is just the bankruptcy for the diocese itself. The parishes who were also involved in these lawsuits, they are not under bankruptcy. So they haven't filed. So some cases still will be filed against parishes. Some cases will be filed against schools. Because what these are cases of negligent supervision, negligent hiring in some cases with the teachers, and negligent retention of known predators. And so diocesan schools, diocesan parishes can still be sued in Supreme Court after today, but the diocese itself, all of those claims will have to go to the bankruptcy court.
How many cases do you have against the Buffalo Diocese, your firm?
We've filed about 105. We've got about another 102 or so left to file. And most of those are against the diocese itself and the parish because it's priest. A handful of those are Catholic school teacher and other employee cases.
How might this impact, if at all, any investigation that's ongoing from the state attorney general or the FBI?
I don't think it's going to impact either of those investigations in any way.
Looking at the overall impact to the diocese itself after this filing, we know that they posted a $5 million loss in 2019. Past reporting from Charlie Specht, who we've had on talking about this story many times, have shown that they have a hefty surplus of nearly $50 million that just a couple of years ago. The diocese will continue to operate almost as normal on a week-to-week basis, right?
That's right. The first step will be to appoint a trustee, and the second step will be to appoint a committee of creditors. And so the creditors committee will have some say as to what the diocese does in terms of paying its bills. But, for example, in Rochester, there had to be a motion to so that they could make payroll and pay their benefits to their employees. Those are not the types of things that the creditors committee or our plaintiffs would be trying to impede in any way. The diocese will be operating and its operations will stay, be happening smoothly right into the future.
Well, as you mentioned that yesterday was the payday for the diocese, how do they meet paydays in the future when it's, under bankruptcy?
They'll get permission from the court. The creditors committee will be formed pretty quickly. They'll get permission and they'll be able to make paydays.
Hey, Steve, we really appreciate the time and the insight. That is Steve Boyd, attorney, joining us live as the Diocese of Buffalo files for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in a federal courtroom. That filing made this morning in U.S. Federal Bankruptcy Court after weeks of really saying the move was imminent and to come.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.